One producer, James Platy, on the board on a Friday night in Lansing. Well, he's become known as the father of repairing and upgrading satellites, designing the tools and technologies that enable astronauts to perform intricate tasks difficult to do even on the ground. NASA Deputy Associate Director Frank Cepolina visiting the Michigan State University campus today, and he joins us now. Frank, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on the line. I appreciate it. I really appreciated the visit to Michigan State University.
Well, you got some good weather too to enjoy. Now, you know,
yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Yep, it's stunning. Now, you know, you've been with NASA since 1963, and
yeah.
Some would say that you've certainly seen the heyday, and that it might be over now with the shuttle missions behind us. What is ahead for NASA, and what is the agency's next ambitious goal?
Well, we've got plenty of ambitious goals, but the most significant which is to go to very far reaches of space that we've never done before. And to do that, we need very special vehicles, and we're trying to develop those vehicles that take us there. And one of the things you need is that you need very powerful rockets. You also need vehicles that are capable of carrying reasonable number of crew members, and protecting the crew members from radiation environment and from those kinds of things, and then moving out and doing them.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, it sounds a lot easier to say it than to actually do it, because there are so many different options, so many different approaches and techniques, that it becomes kind of a mind-boggling trade-off decision-making process to arrive at the one that makes the most sense, and that fits the economics of today.
Oh yeah, one non-technical question, the budget. How tight is it right now at NASA, and how's that affecting your work?
Well, in a bigger sense, the budget is very constrained today, and it basically forces us to think rather frugally about the near term, and to try to squeeze in as much of the science aspects as well as the transportation and human transport aspects as we can. So, you know, NASA is a very balanced agency. It likes to do human exploration along with science, along with discoveries like Hubble, along with the future James Webb Space Telescope. It likes to do those kinds of things. And it likes to do those in parallel with all the ongoing developments.
Now, one thing you know all about is satellites. Just give me a broader sense of it. How cluttered is the space area where satellites are now orbiting, and how big of a problem has that become?
Well, you know, the dilemma is beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, and one could argue that the glass is half full, and the other saying that the glass is half empty. And there's different locations in space. And the real locations in space that are very crowded are the locations in space that are geosynchronous orbit, where you've got 378 communication satellites parked over our little planet, all the way around the planet, so that they're looking at continents on the planet and capable of transmitting wideband signals to the planet. And that process basically demands that you fill up the slots, so to speak, over the planets that have continents. So that's a pretty crowded area to deal with. And so one can get into concerns or problems with two satellites colliding, one satellite drifting past another, the other having to move so it doesn't get hit.
How often does that happen? Is that a daily or weekly event where we have close calls and satellites have to adjust to each other?
Well, you know, I would say maybe two or three times a year at best so far. Now, will it happen more and more frequently? Probably, as more and more satellites get there. These satellites are parked very close together. And somebody asked me today, well, how many miles is close together? And I would say that I couldn't sit down and calculate the number. But satellites are placed within a half a degree going around a 360-degree circle. A lot of them are placed within half a degree of each other because that's where the communications business case is for a specific satellite. That is, that specific satellite wants to look at a specific spot on the ground and dump data to the ground because that's where the profit is. That's what the business model says it should do. So there are many places of the continents in which there are a lot of closely knit satellites that are in those bands that are trying to transmit data to the U.S., to Denver, to San Francisco, whatever.
Right, we certainly do rely on them. I'm talking to NASA Deputy Associate Director Frank Cepolina. He's visiting the Michigan State University campus today. You know, we put these satellites up in space. How long are they up there, and how much maintenance is really required once they're positioned?
Okay, well, there's two families of satellites. There's the commercial communications families of satellites at geosynchronous orbit, and they've got their own business models, and they stay up there 15 to 20 years sometimes. Sometimes if they encounter problems, less than 5 years or 7 years. But on the average, those satellites are good for 7.5 to 15 years. Okay, and then they have within those satellites to live within the international communications requirements, they have enough fuel left that when they're ready to be disposed, they can push themselves up to a 220 nautical mile higher altitude, and they're immediately disposed of at that point. And that becomes what I jokingly refer to as Cadillac Heaven. That's really the junkyard for expended communication satellites.
Do they float out into space, or they just kind of hover in that area?
They float out, but they generally hover in that area, but they generally float, and they're dead, and if they hit each other, it doesn't really matter because they go up, they don't come down.
Are there defense agency satellites up there that do have weaponry attached to them and can shoot down other satellites?
Well, I don't know that. That's not a question for me. I'm with NASA. We're a non-defense agency.
Understood. I just wondered if it's all friendly up there, if there are some disagreements that occur sometimes.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not in that business. So from what I can tell, it's pretty much a friendly business. Everybody is trying to operate in a commercial sense. Now, we're talking about commercial satellite. In a commercial communication sense, the driver is economics. Satellite owners and operators are basically trying to make a reasonable return on their money. See, satellites cost $250 to $350 million, including launch costs, so they're not exactly cheap. So it's very important to the owners and the operators to cooperate with each other. But sometimes unavoidable things happen. Sometimes satellites go out of control. And when they go out of control, they can accidentally bump into the other guy. And so they do work together to try to figure out and coordinate how to move the good satellite, so the bad satellite doesn't strike it at a critical point in time.
That's
there is a lot of working, informal working arrangements that take place in the commercial satellite world.
It gives a whole new definition to the word fender bender. So tell me, what about Mars? You know, President Bush talked about it a bit. Do you think that from what you know about our space program that we will see some kind of a manned flight to Mars within the next 50 years, let's say?
Yes, I think within the next 50 years. I think we have to just keep being very steady in our thought processes of going to Mars. In our thought processes, Gordon, in our planning processes, we have to be very steady and determined and consistent in making incremental steps in technology that will take us from deep space orbits, orbits that can put us around the moon, to orbits that can put us on libation points that make it easier to get out from the gravities of Earth and Moon that can get us to other locations,
mm-hmm.
and keep working on the stepladder and keep putting more and more lattices on the stepladder so that we can go higher and higher and easier with bigger and bigger rockets. So I think it really comes down to a question of economics and patience.
I see. Now, just a minute left and one more question, which is your thoughts about private trips to space. Do you think that will catch on in a big way soon?
I think private trips to space, just like private trips to Italy and private trips to, give me a tough spot, private trips to Antarctica.
Antarctica? I was going to say that.
Right. I think human curiosity will open up the markets to privatization of space. Now, the problem is I can't predict whether it's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years or whether it's going to happen in the next 10 years. But I think eventually the spirit of humans, independent of government constraints, the spirit of humans is geared towards exploration, finding out new fields, new discoveries, new areas in the universe to go to that possibly will render more benefits to our planet, or if not more benefits to our planet, perhaps some economic benefits to a given company that wants to invest in such a thing.
Yeah, as long as we can, we can get on our cell phones and text our friends, I guess that's the bottom line.
But you know that is key to this thing of operations in geosynchronous orbit. Bandwidth. Bandwidth is exploding. And you just look at now what's happened with iPad, right?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of demands for bandwidth, iPad is just blowing the market wide open in terms of the communications demand.
Sure, and that motivates the satellite shooting up there and motivates the whole business. So
commercial communication satellites is what's going to support a major element of broadband drivers.
Yep.
And I just attended a conference called 2012, and that conference had to do with all the communications providers and their view of what's going to happen in the next 5 years, and it's going to double.
Hmm.
It's going to double the amount of bandwidth needed.
Sounds like time to buy some stock. NASA Deputy Associate Director Frank Cepolina visiting MSU today. Frank, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure doing this interview.
Excellent.
And I would love to have Cindy get a copy of that iPad. She'll send it to us.
Excellent. Sounds good, Frank. Now, coming up next, we had...